Do burn victims get a discount at crematoriums? What was Captain Hook's name before he got the hook? If ghosts can walk through walls, why don't they fall through the floor? All these questions and more on the Abnormal Matters podcast. I had all these Disney ones last time, and I didn't use them, so I was like, I have to like put a Disney one in there.
Yeah. Well, hello, folks. This is the Abnormal Matters podcast, episode 23. We're going to be doing Aliens in the Bible. And unfortunately, Mark is not with us tonight. It's me and Austin. And we're going to tackle this episode on our own, going duo, not trio. No trifecta, of course. We always want to start with our science news of the week. And the science news of the week that I picked was, study finds hyperbaric oxygen treatments halt the aging of blood cells and reverse the aging process. All these athletes, that kind of stuff, like LeBron James, he's got one of those. There's something in it. There's actually some study behind it. Tel Aviv University and the Shamir Medical Center in Israel indicates that hyperbaric oxygen treatment, which is HBOT, is healthy aging adults can stop the aging of blood cells and reverse the aging process. In a biological sense, the adults' blood cells actually grow younger as the treatment progresses.
What?
Yeah. So it's kind of a reverse, the fountain of youth. The aging process reverses.
That's insane.
Yeah. The researchers found that a unique protocol of treatments with high pressure oxygen in a pressure chamber can reverse two major processes associated with aging and its illnesses. The shortening of telomeres, which is how we age on our DNA, the telomeres just start deteriorating on the outside, which causes aging. And the accumulation of old and malfunctioning cells in the body, well, what this does is focusing on the immune cells containing the DNA obtained from the participants' blood, the study discovered a lengthening of up to 38% of the telomeres, as well as decrease of up to 37% in the presence of senescent cells. And I think that's what like the deterioration of the telomere are, is those kind of cells.
So it basically just completely revitalizes them and then they grow.
Yeah, by 37%.
Holy shit.
Or 38%. The study was led by Professor Shai Efradi. I'm hoping I'm not butchering that. The School of Medicine and Segal School of Neuroscience. And the researchers exposed 35 healthy individuals aged 64 and over to a series of 60 hyperbaric sessions over a period of 90 days. Each participant provided blood samples before, during, and after of the treatments, as well as some time after the series of treatments concluded. The researchers then analyzed various immune cells in the blood and compared the results. And yeah, sure enough, the findings indicated that the treatment actually reversed the aging process in two of its major aspects.
Does it say how much it was to get the treatment?
Well, this was just the test. Okay. So they were just, you know, hey, you want to do a test? Kind of like with that sugar pill you were asking about last time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they were just testing it. So, but yeah, it was free to them. They were just doing research.
I was gonna say, that doesn't sound like something that's available on somebody's insurance.
Oh, no. No, I'm sure they had to have, they had like a clipboard with about an inch thick of paper that they had to sign away their life. Like, if something happens.
No yeah. way. If I gotta sign more than two papers, I'm not taking shit.
But, yeah, I mean, it looks like it works. So, buy a hyperbaric chamber. How much are those cost?
Yeah, I was about to say, I'll get right on building that.
I mean, LeBron has one. Who else was it?
It's just like LeBron.
Joe Rogan.
I'm not surprised.
Joe Rogan built one into his house. A hyperbaric chamber.
Of course he did.
Yeah.
It's fucking Joe Rogan.
Right. Yeah. I remember just listening to one of them and he was saying that he built one because he kept on going to these places to do it. And he was like, I'm building a new house in Texas. I'm going to build one in my house.
With blackjack and hookers.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah. That's Science News of the Week. You want the Fountain Youth, buy a hyperbaric chamber.
That is fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I look forward to your science news of the week. I'm not going to lie, I really do. Not that Mark's isn't great, and not that I don't think I don't do a good job, but I look forward to your science news of the week.
Well, thanks. So you keep kind of pride myself on my science news. All right, so let's get to the nitty-gritty here. Aliens in the Bible. Just kind of give a real quick thing about it. There are some stories in the Bible that has stuck, and some underlying tones of UFO and aliens having contact in the books. And unfortunately, a lot of that testimony was left out when the Bible was rewritten by King James in 1611. Not a lot of people know that a total of 20 books were left out of the canon of the Bible and were hoped not to be spoken of because they are not canon. But in the Christian faith, Catholic, Christian, Abrahamic type of religions, there are a lot of these stories that survive and even in staying in the old Aramaic to be able to be interpreted. And it's really interesting to go through these because some of the stuff that these people are describing are definitely sound like alien encounters, but they just don't know how to describe it because they don't have the vocabulary. You know, like try to take, for example, say we took an Xbox back to them and we cracked it open and just had the innards showing. How is that person going to try to describe it back then with that type of vocabulary? You know?
That'd be completely mind-blowing. It would change their whole society.
But, I mean, like, how would they try to describe it? They don't have the words to describe electronics. So, of course, it's like the same thing. If they're seeing shit in the sky.
Shiny, glowing.
Wheels within wheels, and it sounds like thunder, and it's doing flashing lightning. I mean, what does that kind of sound like to you? Like, it sounds technological to me.
True. I almost kind of thought for some reason, like instead of an Xbox, for some reason this clicked a little better. Like if you take a TV back mm-hmm. then and just show them literally all around the world, just on a little square. Like, dude, what the fuck?
Right. Yeah. It blew their mind.
Yeah.
But the biggest question is, and kind of like with the aliens in the Bible, we have to take what they wrote down.
Yeah.
And what they were trying to describe. So how would they try to describe a TV? It's a magical fucking box that,
you know. See through other worlds.
Right. Yeah, you're seeing other worlds. Because they don't know what the Mayan temples and that kind of stuff look like or where the hell they are. So they probably think it's other worlds. But, I mean, I have a lot from this book that I read, I don't know, a couple of years ago. But it's a really great book. It's called Ancient Aliens in the Bible. Evidence of UFOs, Nephilim, and the True Faces of Angels in Ancient Scriptures by Xavier Hayes. And it was a quick read. It was a good read. It's only about 230 pages. Really good to go through because he takes some of the literal text and kind of breaks it down of what he thinks that is ancient UFO encounters in the Bible. And some of the stuff, it stayed in there, especially with Moses. Stories of Moses and that kind of stuff, yeah. And I'll kind of get into it. But it also does pull from some of those lost books, like the Book of Noah and the Book of Enoch and all that. So it was good stuff. But I'm going to be kind of referencing that a little bit from what I had for the aliens in the Bible.
There's about 17, 18 of those stories that just didn't make it, right?
I think it was like 20 books.
Okay.
It was 20 of those books. Morning. Yeah.
I feel like we've mentioned the Book of Kings before on another episode.
The Book of Kings?
Yeah.
Not the Book of Kings. I know what you did with the Sumerians.
Yeah.
The Kings List. Okay. Yeah.
I digress.
No, it's all good. So
when I saw Kings, I was like, wait a minute, buzzword.
But what'd you have?
Because I have a lot of... I mainly went with... I think I got about 10 to 11 just little verses kind of here and there, just ones that I thought were, just the way that they were described were flashy, I guess is a word that I could use, or a little, I don't want to say exaggerated, because, like you said, they just didn't have the vernacular back then to be able to fully describe, like, what I'm looking at.
Right.
So I took a couple of those where I felt like they were using kind of just what they knew, like the most incredible words they could. So I thought this one was pretty interesting. This is Ezekiel 1:4, and I believe it's the fourth line in the paragraph. It said, I looked, and I saw wisdom coming out of the north, an immense cloud with flashing lightning and surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing metal.
Yeah, Ezekiel's was one of the, probably the most famous alien encounter in the Bible. Not much is known about Ezekiel except that, and sorry guys, and I wanted to preface this in the beginning. I have no religion, I don't believe, but yet I have studied a lot of different religions and that kind of stuff. So I'm not saying that I'm a professional or anything like that, but it's interesting stuff to me. You know, where we get society's beliefs and that kind of stuff. So, not much is really known about Ezekiel besides that the chariot came and got him. What he depicts in his chapter there, that the chariot itself, he's kind of describing a helicopter, because he was talking about a wheel within a wheel,
mm-hmm.
and it, how do I put it? Just like you were saying, with the vocabulary and stuff, the wings, oh, here it is. So the wings were separated. Two wings of every one were joined to one another, and two covered their bodies. So he's talking about the creatures that were actually coming with that UFO.
Mm-hmm.
And it said that it had they had the faces of men, which I'm thinking helicopter style. You're seeing this craft in the sky, and then you're looking into the window, and you can see the pilot.
Yeah.
So you're seeing the actual face of man. So I think that he was actually seeing the pilots inside the craft itself when he was saying that they had faces of men. There was another point here. Oh, and then he said, and he also talked about, and when they went, I heard the noise of their wings like the noise of great waters. And I thought that was an interesting kind of depiction too with it. Because what does rushing water sound like? Like rapids.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like in your mind, you can picture the sound of rapids. Well, what is the sound of a helicopter blade going around? It's kind of like a depiction of a propeller almost, you know, like the sound of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it would kind of line up with that. So I think honestly with Ezekiel, considering his limited vocabulary, it's kind of like a noisy storm cloud that he was talking about in that, and what he was writing, a fiery glow of rotating alien propulsion system. I mean, that's what I kind of gather from it. Not an actual true helicopter, but
yeah.
I mean, just something in that sense that had some kind of motor rotating to keep it aloft.
Yeah.
You know?
I wanted to bring up something about Da Vinci. I don't know if it pulls it off of our subject. Just some of his inventions he had created, and I know he wasn't quite that far behind, or like that far back in time. But just to think, like, if Da Vinci in his time was creating shit with other types of propulsion other than just kind of what was readily available, which was nothing at the time.
Right.
I just think it's insane that they talk about, like, flying objects or, like, building flying things back then. How the fuck?
Right.
So I thought it was super interesting when you said that. But it just reminded me of some shit.
Oh, yeah. Well, he had some of, the original drawings in his mind of, like, a submarine or...
Are all those pictures in that book?
What?
What you're talking about. Oh, you're talking about Da Vinci. Sorry, mm-hmm. I thought you were talking about
Da Vinci. No, Da Vinci.
Yeah. The lost Art of Da Vinci or whatever.
Yeah.
So another verse that I thought was really interesting was Genesis 1:26. Then God said, "Let us make him and mankind in our image."
That's one of my favorite ones.
"In our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky, over the livestock and all the animals, and over all the creatures that belong along the ground."
So what's that mean to you?
When he said us, like, I was really, I was like, well, if there's, and again, Austin kind of sits in the middle. I wanted to preface this too, since you did. It's not that I don't believe in a higher power. I don't know where I fit in or where I belong as far as a full belief system. So are we here for a reason? Yes. Do I believe something bigger than ourselves put us here? Like, I don't think it's that crazy. You got to come from somewhere. So I'm not saying that this is true or that it's not. Just,
we're just looking at the evidence,
yeah,
of what they actually wrote down in the Bible. I find it interesting that "let us make him in our image."
Yeah, exactly.
Like, right? Who is he talking to?
Yeah.
If we're talking about God, and he's omnipotent, and he is the sole God, who is he talking to? In the old Bible, in the Old Testament, whenever the in the old Hebrew, they used to call God Elohim.
Mm-hmm.
And anything with a him after it is plural. Because if it was singular, they would be calling him Elo. But in this instance, all the way through the new, for the Old Testament, they always say Elohim, which would be gods, plural. That would make sense then.
Yeah.
Let us make him in our image.
And that's exactly what I took from it.
Yeah. It's interesting shit. The other thing is with the whole Genesis. I mean, we can kind of get into Genesis a little bit. Angel. Let's talk about angels real quick, because I think that is one of the biggest depictions of actually aliens coming to visit us. Okay, so in the book, and I'm not going to give away a whole bunch of this. You guys can read this too, that Ancient Aliens in the Bible book. Despite their popularity, the only thing certain about angels is that the word angel comes from the Greek agelos, meaning messenger, or delegate, or generally summed up as a supernatural messenger from God. Words associated with the term angels appear more than 176 times in the sacred texts, where they're described as supernatural intelligent beings and emissaries of God. So the church actually changed the whole depiction of an angel. And this was later. This was like in 1215. Later, biblical commentator, writer, and scholars would influence future Christian traditions by making these angelic figures coherent with their vision of spiritual and transcendence, monotheistic God. Most view them as spiritual beings with no material body, who take visible appearance only when needed, and only appear to eat or walk, but never actually do it. So that kind of sounds like, you know, your normal angel that you would think about in your head.
Yeah.
In other words, they're not physical beings requiring human-like needs. Descriptions in the Bible lead the reader away from viewing angels as purely physical beings, and instead shower them with fancy supernatural adjectives to describe them as having ethereal, airy, and fiery bodies. With too many hypotheses to choose from, the church decided at the Fourth Lateran Council, 1215, that angels were nothing more than spiritual supernatural beings. So they just voted. Okay, how are we going to come out and actually say and describe an angel? And they voted on it. And that's the way angels came out to us.
All in favor?
Right, yeah. I mean, they had a council meeting and how are we going to describe angels? And then it was set forth at that point with the church. But, I mean, again, go back to the word angel. It means messenger. Not supernatural, spiritual. It was a messenger from God. So what if our gods were aliens? And these were the messengers. coming down from the crafts.
This totally reminds me of the Sumerians.
Well, a lot of the biblical, let's go through it. Sumerians Bible is verbatim, not verbatim, but pretty much it's all copied.
Pretty damn close.
Pretty damn close. It words switched around here or there, but if you look at the cuneiform texts and their stories, Noah, it was already written thousands of years before, was Ziusudra. Ziusudra built an ark, the rains came, the huge flood. The stories are basically the same. They just switched out Ziusudra and Noah.
There was also Adam.
Yeah. Yeah. So, it's all, for me, it's copy. It's copy. I don't care, dude. look at it. Okay, if you're going to believe in something, and this is coming from somebody that doesn't believe in something, right? If you're going to believe in something, really dig into it and really understand what you're believing in.
All right.
You can't just join something. And I know, of course, with a Christian belief, you're born into it.
Yeah.
With the family. But look at the roots of where it comes from. Because it isn't also just from the Sumerian. It's from the Hebrew. The Old Testament is the Jewish Bible. The Christians and Catholics pretty much took a part of their religion and then added on to it with the New Testament.
It all seems a little shady, don't it?
What?
Because I have thought about this. I don't think I've ever said this out loud.
I'm
not saying, I'm just saying. How much money does the Catholic Church bring in? Let's say for per year.
Per year? I don't know. Millions. Billion, maybe?
See where I'm getting at.
I'm not knocking people that have faith in something in any religion whatsoever. If you have a belief, go for it. If it's not hurting anybody else and you're being a good person, believe in whatever you want.
Definitely.
You know?
I concur, doctor.
But if you're going to believe in it, dig into it and find out the roots of what your beliefs are. Because you start digging into Christianity and Catholicism, it goes back to Jewish, and then Jewish goes back to Old Aramaic, and Old Aramaic goes all the way back to the Sumerians.
I think it was interesting you brought that up, too, because people that read the Bible, some, at least kind of how my parents were with it, my parents didn't dig that hard. Like you were saying, they were born into it. Like, this is what we believe.
Mm-hmm.
Most people will be like, I've read the Bible completely. But how many of them can tell you, I actually went and did like a data research on not only what I was reading, but how far, like the actual time period of how far it traces back.
Where does this belief come from? Yeah. But we totally digressed. Genesis. That's what we were talking about.
Yes.
Okay, so you've heard of the Nephilim.
Mm-hmm.
So what are the Nephilim?
The Nephilim are giants.
Right. Well, while you're trying to find that, I'm just going to read the part in Genesis here about the Nephilim. Genesis 6, 1 through 7. And after that man began to... What? I always hate trying to read biblical stuff because it's all backwards.
Right.
And after that, men began to be multiplied upon the earth, and daughters were born to them. The sons of God, seeing the daughters of men, that they were fair, took to themselves wives of all which they chose. And God said, My spirit shall not remain in man forever, because he is flesh, and his days shall be 120 years. Now giants were upon the earth in those days, for after the sons of God went into the daughters of men, then they brought forth children, these of the mighty and old men of renown. So they're talking about angels, or these sons of God, coming from the sky, coming down, and mating with humans, women. And then that's where it starts getting into the Nephilim.
Mysterious being, or people, mentioned in the Hebrew Bible, that are large and strong, referenced sometimes as, or interpreted them as, fallen angels.
Mm-hmm. So they, the men of renown, were the Nephilim, an ancient race of giants who were the offspring of, and what I would say, is the Anunnaki. I hate to try to bring them into this stuff, but the Anunnaki rebels who had mated with the Eves, the women of Earth.
Yeah.
And they created giants. I'm talking like not just Manute Bol or Shaquille O'Neal.
Shaq Attack.
Yeah, not this time. Not this time, Nephilim. Anyway.
The picture, like, I actually found a picture from Genesis 6:1. Sorry, I'm going to cut you off.
No, you're fine.
The picture that's just, and definitely look this up online if you don't believe it for yourselves. They're almost like squid-like looking by the painting. It looks crazy.
Oh, yeah, kind of. I've never seen that one. It's kind
of
weird.
The Fall of Rebel Angels is the name of the painting.
The Fallen Angels. Well, the word Nephilim itself, it comes from the Hebrew root of the verb nafal, meaning to fall, to come down, to ascend, to descend. So, thus, the quoted verse should be more correctly translated to the following of, at that time on earth where there were those who had fallen or descended. But these, it just, it, if you take what it actually is really supposed to mean and then interpret it instead of, you know, reading the King James, because by the time King James got a hold of the Bible, that thing had been rewritten, translated one more time. It's like playing telephone.
Yeah.
You know? So you really got to get back to the Hebrew root of what they wrote. And sometimes Hebrew words have many different meanings, and, you know, the verbs and that kind of stuff. But
nobody speaks Hebrew anymore, right?
Oh, yeah, Jewish.
I mean, maybe I wasn't thinking Hebrew. What the fuck was I thinking?
Aramaic?
Maybe.
I mean, Aramaic is a rudimentary form of Hebrew. About to look it up. looked like you were positioning the computer there, like, I'm going to fact check that shit. In Aramaic, the noun Nephil means giant, making it easy to see why the Greeks translated this into Nephilim as gigantes or giant. The popular Hebrew word for giant is Rephaim. The Rephaim were an ancient race of giants from old Canaan, who were joined by other giant tribes such as the Anakim, MM, and I can't even do that Z word, and more. So, it's talking about, yeah, giants were around, and they were huge. I mean, where do you think we got the story of Goliath?
David and Goliath?
Yeah, Goliath was a giant, and he was an offspring of the Nephilim, and he was, by this, I forget what part of the story, but it's starting to describe Goliath himself and how many chain links it took to actually build his, you know, armor and that kind of stuff. By all the mathematics, and they tried to transcribe this, but by all the mathematics, Goliath was around 9 to 10 feet tall. I mean, just a monster of a person.
He'd smack Shaq.
Huh?
He'd smack Shaq.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He'd be Shaq would be looking up to him like he was a little kid. I mean, you gotta think. Shaq's what, 7'2"?
Yeah, 7'2", 7'3".
Okay, so just, whatever. Just take out the two. So he's 7 foot, right? 3 more feet on top of Shaq. And he wasn't a lanky dude like Manute Bol.
Just Diesel.
Yeah, cock Diesel.
Can't put his arms down.
Had to walk through doorways sideways.
That's a huge bitch. I thought this one was really interesting. To be honest with you, this is probably the most interesting one that I thought that I found. It's Isaiah 13:5, line 5. They come from faraway lands, from the ends of the heaven, the Lord and the weapons of his wrath to destroy the whole country.
So it's talking about,
I kind of depicted them whatever they were seeing, trying to use whatever vocabulary they had at the time, like you were saying, just watching them kind of come in and almost sound like they were just destroying stuff.
Well, I mean, there's been talks about nuclear weapons being used back then, not only just in the Bible, but in a lot of Indian culture. They talk about the, what do they call it? The something wind. It's like a deadly wind. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, and that would be depicting nuclear fallout. You know, like it's
all that air.
The radiation.
Yeah.
The radiation of it. Sodom and Gomorrah, that was a great story that really intrigued me with a lot of the aliens in the Bible. Because if you don't know about Sodom and Gomorrah, it was just a place you could do anything. I mean, it was like where all the heathens lived, the way that the Bible depicts it. And there were, in the story, and I'm going to kind of give the Reader's Digest of it, but in the story, there are these two angels, and they get plopped in the desert, and then they walk for a few days, and they meet Abraham, just chilling underneath this little oasis. And Abraham's immediately knows that they are angels. And how? You know, like, if they were wearing something, you know, like a spacesuit or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, like, they oh, those are angels.
Why did I imagine just two guys in big-ass white cloaks with heavy-ass wings and halos just, like, sweating their ass off walking right through the desert?
But here's the question, because Abraham says, you guys have been traveling for forever. Let me wash your feet, get something to eat, you can rest here. Time out. If we're talking about angels, why do they need to rest? Why do they need to eat?
Or get washed up.
Why did they get dropped off in the desert and have to haul their ass across the fucking desert for a few days to reach Sodom and Gomorrah? Why didn't God just plop them down there if they were going to send a message to Sodom and Gomorrah that they were going to be destroyed? Or get dropped off there. Like Uber God. Like, you know, like he just drops them right there. Instead of way out in the desert. And then they're tired and weary. I thought these were superhuman entities.
Didn't eat, didn't sleep.
Right. So, a couple of them move on. And they get to Sodom and Gomorrah. Well, then they run into Abraham's son, I think. Lament. I don't remember. But he immediately recognizes that they're angels, too. And he, like, you know, bowing down and all this. And he says, well, you know, what are you here for? They're talking. And the angels say, well, we're here to deliver a message. And he's like, well, where will you stay? And they're like, we're just going to stay in the streets. And he's like, that's not a good idea. You know you're in Sodom, right? Like, you should probably roll your windows up and lock the doors kind of area.
And I already stand out in a crowd.
Yeah, yeah. Don't stop the stop signs. Just keep going. And he said, look, just come to my house. Lot. That was his name. Lot. I knew it started with an L. Anyways, the angels, you know, they agree. They go to his house. Then there's a mob that starts circling around Lot's house. And they want the angels. They want to do some nasty shit to the angels. Yeah, they want to sodomize them. They want to sexually abuse them. They're telling Lot to send the angels out. We want them. And the Lot even tries to give up his daughters to the crowd before the angels. And they didn't want that. They wanted the angels. And as they started to barge in to Lot's house, the angels pull Lot back. And then, I don't know if it's weird in the description of it, but the one casted out a blinding light that made everybody basically have vertigo that was in the mob, and they dispersed. What the fuck did that dude just use?
The Men in Black.
So, well, we have weapons now.
Like a flashbang.
Not a flashbang. It is a riot weapon that they use in prisons. And it's a light. And it emits this light that goes, you know, when you see it, it creates vertigo.
Oh, shit. I didn't even know that.
In you. Yeah. You get sick. You don't know what's up and what's down. Just from that light. What kind of technology do they have? And because it sounds like the way that I see it in my head, this dude pulled him back and then had some kind of device on his hand, like Iron Man style, and like just did that thing and caused everybody to kind of keel over with sickness and being disoriented. And then they dispersed. But the angels, to end the story of it, the angels warned Lot to get his family out of there because Sodom and Gomorrah was going to be destroyed. They kind of abandoned telling everybody. They just kind of told Lot.
Which is kind of crazy because if they would have just kind of sat and heard them out, then they would all have survived. They're just like, these guys are jerks.
Yeah.
We're going to help this guy because this guy's cool. Like, yeah. Let's get the fuck out of here.
Right. Yeah. And, yeah. I mean, the moral of the story... For the story of Sodom and Gomorrah is like, don't question God, or just go along with what God is providing in direction. Because at the end, when Lot and his family are vamoosing, they hear the explosions and the fire and brimstone that came down from the sky and destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Nuclear weapon. Right?
Yeah.
Well, Lot's wife was getting behind from the pack. And she turned around and looked, and she turned into a pillar of salt. That's how it goes. Now, the word that they use for salt is not very transcribed well, because with the Hebrew, they use a different word for salt, but it basically was like a pillar of ash.
Yeah.
What kind of weapon do you know that can do that?
Vaporize somebody.
Exactly. A nuke.
That's fucking crazy. Because the more I thought about it, the more you kind of talk. For some reason, I still imagined her like whole. But when you said salt, I was like, I'll just a fucking... Basically just an ashtray upside down.
Well, kind of like the people of Pompeii. You know, the city of Pompeii?
Where the volcano exploded and just fucking annihilated everything?
Yeah, well, the pyroclastic plume, I think that's what it's called, yeah. That races forward. It has so much heat that it...
Oh, they just fucking...
Yeah, they were frozen, and if you were to touch them, like, it would just, like, dissolve, like, in you know, just ash. But yeah, they got preserved. And I think that was what happened, because, and this is just a side thing. When they were doing an archaeological dig in Middle East, they came across this town that they were unveiling. And we're talking biblical times, so even probably before, in the BC. When they did this dig, they found, and I'll have to remember what site it was, but they found a whole bunch of dead bodies and like skeletal remains. In the main part of the city, like in the main road.
Yeah.
Weird things with that, and the archaeologists have found. Because, one, why didn't they bury their dead? Because we were doing that at that point.
Yeah.
We were burying people. So they just were leaving people out in the streets dead. So that means that there was nobody around to bury them, which means people left that area, right?
Mm-hmm. Two, like they left in a hurry.
Exactly. Two, that kind of stands out with the archaeologists, was all the skeletal remains were intact. Okay? Meaning like all the bones were still there.
Yeah, it's like where they lie.
Exactly. Which is very weird, because what happens when something dies... out in the wild.
That's how it's torn to shreds.
Scavengers.
Yeah.
And they pick them apart, and you'll find bone here, bone there, wherever. But everything was intact with all these bodies going down through. Then they do an analysis on the actual bones themselves to try to carbon date.
Yeah.
They find radiation in the bones. And it's not natural, you know, like uranium cake or anything. These bones were radiated by something. So, nuclear bomb went off or something like that? I mean, it had to, because scavengers and that kind of stuff, they kind of have a sixth sense about those things, mm-hmm. to where they don't go eat
anything that's irradiated.
Right.
Yeah.
And it would make sense because everything had left the area.
Peace.
Yeah. Humans and all. But I just thought that was an interesting fact. I think that some nukes probably could have gone off if there was like an alien influence, back in those times. Because they talk about the wars of the gods.
I'll have to get that book from you whenever you got some time. Yeah. I like how it's, I don't want to say dumbed down, but it's put in layman's to where anybody could read it and be like, holy shit, like I didn't realize that after first glance.
Yeah. Well, fuck. Moses, you know, with the story of Moses going up Mount Sinai to get the tablets. Moses was warned by some weird... a quote-unquote friend of his, that would appear from mist and lights. And it would only talk to Moses at his tent when everybody was camped at Mount Sinai. And he was warned, do not look at God. You will not be able to handle it. He said he was trying to say to get into some mountainous crevasses as God passed. Mm-hmm. Moses went up there. And when he came back down with the tablets, half of his face was fucking burnt. Burnt. Like afterburner or some type of radiation. And he would actually mask himself because of the sight of his burns. It would scare children.
He's just cooked.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think it was radiation. I think that the flyby of God was a flyby of extraterrestrial, and he got fucking burnt by the ship.
Like a drop off.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm just trying to picture how I would explain that.
How you would explain what?
Just how Moses was expected, like, well, what'd you see?
Right. Well, here, let me pull this up real quick here. Okay, in the book that I've been reading, Moses... Let's see. After the Elohim give Moses some useful guidelines and precautions, they tell him he cannot look directly at it or stand before it because he would surely die. The Elohim also directs where Moses should stand as to not be affected by the Lord's glory, and even tells him that he might see the back of his face as it flies over.
That's really common with nukes. And like you were saying, radiation, I've heard other accounts of just people in the military when we were doing nukes,
World War II,
experimenting with nukes for World War II. There was a story, there was something in the Navy, they wanted to show their own soldiers, like, what it actually, like, if you see this, like, figure out what the fuck you're gonna do.
Right.
Like, so, sit cross-legged.
Here comes the pain.
Yeah. Sit cross-legged on the deck, close your eyes, put your hands over your eyes. And they said that once the initial flash went, and then you started to feel the percussion from it, all the radiation and the x-rays and shit, they could see, like, the bones through their hands. They could see, like, shit into their skull.
Damn.
So, that sounds exactly like heavy dose of radiation.
Yeah. Absolutely. And then... I mean, it gets kind of into it where it's like, so it's talking about the burning of his face. To do this without producing irreversible consequences for Moses, he ordered him to take cover in the cleft of the rocks where it is safe. However, after this experience, followed by the delivery of the Ten Commandments after meeting the Lord on the Mount Sinai, Moses had his face permanently burned by glowing light that required a veil to cover it at all times, which was only removed when he entered the tent before Elohim. And it kind of gives a little excerpt from the Bible, and it says, I don't mean to laugh, sorry. And it came to pass, when Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tables of the testimony in Moses' hand, when he came down from the mount, that Moses knew not that the skin of his face shone by reason of his speaking with him. And when Aaron and all the children of Israel saw Moses, behold, the skin of his face was shown, and they were afraid to come near him. Like, he comes down, he's like, I've got the tablets. And they're like, you okay, dude? He's like, yeah, why? He's like, got a little something right here. He didn't know when he came down. That's what I was trying to say. Like, he when he came down, he didn't know he was burnt.
Had no idea.
And then everybody was like, you all right, dude? You look kind of crispy there.
Literally exactly what I was getting ready to say. You're just a bit crisp on one side.
But yeah, he had to cover his face. Because of the alien flyby, I say.
It's got to be such a bummer, too. That's like, that's the height of his life.
Yeah.
He's like, I just did the most amazing thing.
Well, what else you got?
Something else that was in Isaiah, and this kind of jumps back into just the original statement, how I said just kind of them flying in. I just thought it was really interesting the way they described it. Isaiah 68, line 8. Who are these that fly along like clouds, like doves in their nests? So, again, just kind of seeing them flying in. Like, so they just reference the only other thing that they know that flies is birds.
Right. And it's kind of like if we were, we depict that all the time. Apollo 13, I think it was. Yeah. Apollo 13, its symbol was an eagle. You know, so if an alien were, you know, now that were flying by the moon or whatever, and they saw that ship coming across and they saw the symbol of that, I mean, would they think that that's what we look like? Or, you know what I mean? Like, it's just a symbol, you know? Birdman.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, but I mean, we use symbols all the time and stuff can just get misconstrued. But yeah, like you're saying, everything, all of this really just talks about the vocabulary and what you can imagine if you step back and really look at it. There's been people that have been in the Vatican and they are transcribers. They are people that try to interpret the Bible from the Hebrew and post their findings. And there were, I forget the specific, it started with a B, but one of the priests, very high ranking, right? He looked at it from the perspective of maybe this is aliens, right? He started doing his translations based off of that. I mean, he had already done 17 or 18 different translations and the Vatican accepted them as being true, but he looked at it from a different point of view and he was immediately fired.
Immediately? Just
immediately. Yeah. Yeah. Now, they didn't deny his interpretations were incorrect. They just, you're done here.
Just ixnated.
Yeah, we're done. Yeah. B-I-S-B-Y? Bisby? I think it's the priest's name that was doing the interpretations. But talking about interpretations, there was a good one from Zechariah. Zechariah, he belonged to a group of biblical prophets that thrived at the end of the 6th century. And in his book, he starts talking about visions and meeting with angels who were on their way to Sodom. Sodom, sorry. It clearly stated that an angel who was talking to the prophet did so with the notion that he was wide awake. So this wasn't like a dream or, you know, anything like that. He's talking about he saw some shit and he was awake. Zechariah, speaking in the first person, says that he saw a flying scroll. So what does a scroll look like in olden times?
It's just like round. It's got
cylinder shape.
Yeah.
Right? So a flying scroll. So he saw a cylinder in the sky. And when the angel asked him what it was, he confirmed it. In other words, the prophet was wide awake and watching a flying cylinder of some sort, which he confirmed to the angel. The flying object size was even specified as being 20 cubits long and around 10 cubits wide. That measurement nowadays is approximately 30 feet long and 15 feet wide.
Damn.
So he saw a flying cylinder.
30 by 15?
30 by 15 in the sky and was talking to an angel saying, "You seen this shit?" And he was like, "Yep.
Sure do.
Sure enough."
Is that one of them spacey ships? Yes, Cletus. That's a spacey ship.
But, I mean, it's riddled all throughout the Bible. And not only that, the non-canon one that I was talking to you about with Enoch's grandson. Enoch was left out of the canon. It was originally in there, but then was taken out. And Enoch, when he laid eyes on his grandson, he was like, "That's not human," basically. After, here's the book of Noah. It was in the book of Noah of him talking about Enoch. But after some days, my son Methuselah took a wife for his son Lamech, and she became pregnant by him and bore a son. And his body was white as snow. And, I mean, so that's very unusual in the Middle Eastern times. You know, there was no white Jesus, you know?
Yeah.
And his body was white as snow and red as a blooming of a rose. And the hair of his head and his long locks were white as wool. And his eyes opened beautiful. And when he opened his eyes, he lighted up the whole house like the sun. And the whole house was very, very bright. And thereupon he arose in his hands of the midwife, opened his mouth, and conversed with the Lord of righteousness. He said, "I have begotten..." So Methuselah starts talking to Lamech, or no, his son Lamech is the one that is having this child. And he says, "I have begotten a strange son, diverse from and unlike man, and resembling the sons of God." So remember we were talking about in Genesis with the sons of God,
yeah,
the Nephilim. So it sounds like his wife has been laying with the Nephilim instead of him. It's like a Maury Povich back in the Bible. Like me, myself, and Irene.
Yeah.
Yeah. What the fuck? It's a me, myself, and Irene moment. Yeah. Basically. Yeah.
And honey, I've been away writing our difficult ass language.
More and more of that description of that kid is just weird. What is it?
That's what the language looks like.
Yeah. It looks like Sumerian.
How the fuck is somebody supposed to translate all of this? See, I think this is where I struggle when we come to books and certain things. It's hard for me to believe. And I don't know why, because look at like original Chinese writing or like Japanese writing.
The characters. And
yeah, like that's not just one word. That could be a whole fucking paragraph.
Well, it's funny that you're doing it that, because it doesn't read that way. It reads the other way.
There you go.
It reads right to left.
So when people are like, "Yeah, I know how to read that." Like, fucking how, dude? Like, well, that's another thing too. The books in Japan, books in China, they are in the opposite direction that we, here in the United States, the way we read books. They open...
horizontal?
They open this way. So instead of grabbing with your right hand and opening it to where that's the beginning, basically where the start of their books are, that's where the end of ours is. Back end. Yeah.
Huh. Huh. They're lefties.
Pretty much.
I would probably get along with them. Are you a lefty or righty?
I'm a righty.
You're righty.
I used to be able to write with my left hand a little bit. I played sports, So quite a bit. So I got fairly decent with both of my hands. When I got into middle school, I started writing with my left hand instead of my right hand, just to try to switch it up. I had a buddy who was ambidextrous. It was annoying to play sports with him, especially he'd pitch. And I think that was something that you and I talked about before. And you when you golf, you see you can like switch hit either way, right?
No, golf I go right, just because I was taught that. But basketball, I can go left or right.
That's what I was thinking was basketball.
Yeah. Football, I throw right, solely right. It's weird. Pool, I can go left or right.
You can do anything on a pool table faster.
It just depends on who taught me, really. Like, if it was my dad, because my dad was a lefty, too. So it just depends who taught me.
But the language, I struggle with that sometimes, thinking that somebody can look at that. And maybe back then, like, the languages, like you were saying, they're written a lot similar then than they are now. Mm-hmm. Like, looking at this and not ever seeing their font before, or just their characters.
Nah,
that's crazy as hell. Because then I even see, like, math stuff. Refer to me anyways, like, what the like the pi. You know what I mean?
Is that a K squared?
Yeah, right? Like, maybe I'm looking at it too hard and I don't know dick about it as far as their language, but I struggle with people being able to be like, well, it was transcribed and, you know, somebody, this is what, like, maybe, like, not their first language had rewrote it or what right. They interpreted. So, and that just brings us all back to the beginning of it, just how...
Telephone.
Yeah, exactly. That's insane to
telephone.
Me. It gets muddy.
Very muddy, and especially when you start getting into Constantine, because then he even rewrites a lot of stuff in the Bible and takes a lot of stuff out.
Now, what gets depicted? I'd love to know how they determined, like, maybe they did a council thing or however they sat down, like, all right, like, here's all of it. What are we keeping?
Right.
Like, what's going into what we're going to push to the world?
Well, I know you were talking about Revelations.
Yeah.
Revelations wasn't originally in the Bible.
So they added later.
That in later, yeah.
Why would they just add it?
I don't know, man.
Like, all of a sudden, like, yep, green light for this one.
Right.
Send it in tomorrow's paper. See, I'd love to know how each book was, because, like you said, like we were talking about earlier, 17 to 20 books that's just missing. That is a lot of reading material.
Mm-hmm.
That is somebody's life. They're just going to be like, yeah, what's good enough and what's not.
What was the one that I was always telling you about? Book of Jacob? No. I don't remember. It's one of those books that's out there missing. And it, you know, that big separation of Jesus when he was a baby to when he was a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
Dude, he was smiting people left and right in this.
Nathan, was it?
Hmm?
It wasn't the book of Nathan.
No. I did a paper on it for school. Got an A, by the way. I'm not gloating. Let me look it up. Gospel of Thomas.
Yeah.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the Gospel of Thomas talks about adolescent, teenage Jesus smiting people.
Angry Jesus.
Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, I hate to depict someone's savior in their belief, but someone that's supernatural and can kill somebody with thoughts and create miracles.
Being brought up as a human.
Right. Is that possible? Different type of species? I mean, just we're talking about the fallen ones mating with human women. And then this is an immaculate conception. I mean, who's to say? Well, millions of people, of course, because of the Christian Catholic religion. But it's not too far-fetched. If I can believe myself that instead of a god or something like that, if I can believe that aliens had something to do with us coming about, that's really not too far-fetched.
Yeah, 'cause after about 12 or 13 in Nazareth, they kind of just just kind of drops off right there. They don't really say much else. Yeah, early 30s is like 12, 13, and like cut, and then it jumps all the way to, he's about 30, mm-hmm. in between 30 and 35.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense, like you were saying, he's a teenager, I mean, emotions.
Teenager with powers.
Yeah. So you're just really kind of finding your place, finding out who you are. Somebody just piss you off in the wrong way. Like, I believe one of the depictions was somebody kind of just shoulder checked him. Mm-hmm. It was in a little more crowd, like a market area. And somebody kind of shoulder checked him and just immediately just like...
Smited him.
Yeah. Struck it down.
Yes.
So by the time you're 30, 31, 32, you've matured a little. You're not as angry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, here it is. Actually, in that paper that I wrote. From what I've written previously in these essays, we've never seen the young adolescent Jesus in the Bible, only baby to young man. One of the lost books, the Gospel of Thomas, shows him as a young brat with superhuman powers, which I believe is why it is never added to the canon, because it doesn't depict Jesus in a good light. It tells of Jesus being 5 years old, smiting people left and right, breaking laws of the Sabbath, angrily making people drop dead by just shoulder bumping them in the street, making people withered and old, and blinding people who witnessed the events of what he was doing.
That'd be so fucked up.
And then I wrote, just for fun, I wrote, kudos to Joseph, though, for having the cojones to grab Jesus by the supernatural ear. Jesus could have made him drop dead or turn him into something.
Dude, if that was my kid.
Would you want to try to pull his
ear? No. Turn me into like a fucking goat or like a frog or something worse than that.
Yeah.
Just turn me to red goo.
So did you have something on Revelations?
I had a few passages. Okay. A lot of the stuff I did was kind of passage stuff. Did I say anything about the word foreigners used quite a bit?
No.
I don't know if I've said that. I do want to cover this really quick. I thought it was really interesting just how frequently it was used. A lot, I feel like a lot of the verses that I had picked, foreigner, you know. Oh, there was one. Where's that?
Not from foreign land.
No, yeah.
Foreigner.
Like, foreigner.
Right.
It's just the context that it was used, it wasn't at all like... from across the sea, or
right.
from, you know, those people that live up north.
Mm-hmm.
The context was crazy. Hebrews 13:2, line 2, do not forget to show hospitality to strangers, for by doing so, some people have shown hospitality to angels without even knowing it.
Yeah.
And it's just
and kind of like we were depicting with angels.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. I just thought the way that they, even though it was strangers, under my notes that I had put, I actually used Leviticus 24:22, line 22. You are to have the same law for the foreigner and the native born. Just the context that they use is. It doesn't sound like they're, like you said, like they're talking about somebody from a different country.
Right.
Like, when they mean foreigner, they mean, like, not of this earth.
Yeah. Could be.
Another really interesting fact. The Bible is the most shoplifted book in literature.
Shut up.
Swear. Are
you serious? Well, probably because there were so many made. You gotta look at the sample.
True.
Because, I mean, it's the most published.
Yeah.
Throughout.
The oldest, time. The oldest book to ever exist.
Yeah, not the oldest book, but the most reproduced and shipped out.
Yeah, that's what I meant.
Yeah.
It was just the most distributed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was an interesting little tidbit. This part not in it, actually saying that. I saw that on the back of a Snapple, literally today.
Oh, yeah.
So I was like, of all days, I'm going to grab a Snapple that talks about how the Bible has been shoplifted the most in literature. I was like, okay, cool. Like, I know I'm literally going through verses in the Bible, so Coincidence?
Is it a coincidence? Is it a quinky dink?
Just saying. Shit like that. And you know what? It's fucked up because I didn't even connect the two. No. Literally until I'm right now years old. Higher power. Astronomical chance. Just like how many fucking... Just
put it in the randomizer.
Yeah, right? And just send it.
I asked Google the other night, because we were talking about the lottery when it got way up there, mm-hmm. like almost 1 billion. And I said, what are the chances of getting struck by lightning twice? And it said, you have a better chance of getting killed by a golf ball or a cork from a champagne bottle than getting struck by lightning twice.
You know what I'm going to do tonight before I go to bed? Look up how many people have died from a cork.
22 in a year.
In a champagne bottle?
Yeah.
I'm really mad that you actually knew, like, exactly how many. Why do you know that?
Because I asked Google again.
Oh, and then I just told
you. Yeah, because I was like, okay. Sorry, people get killed by cork bottles? Okay, Google. How many people have gotten killed by cork bottles this year?
Like exactly what I was exactly what I was saying.
That's and there it is. 24 people die annually from being hit by champagne corks.
Annually.
Usually in the face at weddings.
It's so tragic. It's supposed to be the happiest day of your life. And cousin Cletus gets killed because he's fucking hitting it on the table trying to get it open.
Aunt Gertrude. It's like fucking 87. She can't even enjoy the wine or the champagne. She gets hit in the face with it.
That's so shitty.
22 people.
Damn.
Every year.
Jesus. Anyways. Fuck.
Yeah. Because we're looking at all the different odds of winning the lottery.
Have you seen those videos where people get struck by lightning twice? Shit's on YouTube. It's insane. Their clothes are like shreds.
Oh. I bet. It's a huge explosion of just energy. I mean, lightning is hotter than the surface of the sun.
I'd rather just get hit with a cork. So I got two more.
Okay.
I lied. I have three more. The verse looks like it's describing... Just a sea creature. Revelations 13:1, line 1. The dragon stood on the shore of the sea, and I saw a beast coming out of the sea. It had 10 horns and 7 heads, with 10 crowns on its horns. And on each head, a blasphemous name. So, like I know you said, Revelation was added a little later on down the road. Just again, the way they describe things with 10 crowns on its horns.
Well, with Revelations more, I think they were really more talking about like the kingdoms of what was around at that time, like the 10 heads, the 10 kings, which also kind of goes back to old school, some of the Nephilim. There were actually 10 Nephilim chiefs in Genesis.
Then it's even crazier, like you were saying, they took, why would they take a piece of that and then like move it over, like match it in 10, like hitting 10 exactly when there's 10 Nephilim, when that's a part that they didn't even talk about.
Yeah, there's a lot of numbers in the Bible that constantly get repeated. They love the number 7. In biblical terms. They love the number 7, they love 3, they love 10, they love 12. Those numbers are huge throughout the Bible.
I didn't know that.
Mm-hmm. 7 is considered a holy number.
Is that why it's lucky? Is that why they consider the number 7 lucky?
I mean, they depict, like, maybe. I mean, they depict 7 days of creation, you know? The 7 seals. All the different 7s that throughout the Bible.
But no, just the imagery and kind of what I try to depict from that. I thought that was interesting. Then the last one I got is Amos 9, 2, and 3. This is just a two-sentence paragraph. But though they dig down to the depths below, from there my hand will take them. Though they climb up to the heavens above, from there I will bring them down. It almost sounds like the words of God, like bringing who's them.
Right.
Like, why is there so many? I thought you were the one creator. Why are there so many of them?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, it.
And again, right back to the Nephilim.
Yeah. You know, and the one that always got me too was Noah's Ark. Even though it does depict the sizes and that kind of stuff that Noah was supposed to build the ark to, what if the ark was not actually wood and materials of that such?
Be more of metal.
What if the ark was actually just a database?
It's taking like a sample.
Yes. Taking a sample of all the animals and putting it into the database.
Well, I didn't even think about that.
Mm-hmm.
That's fucking crazy. Sorry, I just learned something today.
But yeah, what if it was just a database for all the animals? For the different DNAs of them.
Because you had just enough room to store all of them. Like, they make that super clear, like you were saying. They make it very specific. We can only have two of each of these.
Right. And, well, why would we only need two of each?
Is that because, three or four or five?
Right. To repopulate. What if those don't do it, and they don't populate?
Because then it's not guaranteed survival.
Right. So, why don't we just take a sample of the male and female?
That's fucking insane, man. I've never thought of it that way. You literally just blew my fucking mind.
It's my high moments, man. I'm like, what if?
That makes so much sense, though.
It's a database. It's a machine that collects the DNA information.
You know, anytime we do these, I almost have more questions. By the end of them, we're going to have to sit down and go through some of these and be like, all right, let's
go back.
Yeah, let's go back and look at this and really try to tie that knot.
Yeah.
That's fucking nuts. Sorry.
No, you're fine. We're actually probably going to wrap it up here because I do have
a bit of an emergency
at the house.
Totally fine, man. All good.
Dog is locked in the car. So. Keys are in it with the wife's phone that has the app to be able to unlock the car is also in the car. So. I think she's trying to handle it very well. She has not tried to contact me about it, so hopefully she's trying to pull a MacGyver, but I'm going to have to go home and get this figured out.
Paperclip, rubber band, piece of chewing gum. That's the answer.
I'm going to pull a MacGyver, yeah. But we want to appreciate you guys for listening. Absolutely. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Please get a hold of us. I will post our phone number to the Abnormal Matters podcast on the link itself. If you guys want to call in, we always record on every other Monday. So Monday the 1st, and then the every other Monday. So not next Monday, but the Monday after. And then we start recording at like 6:30 Eastern Standard Time. We go till about 8:30 and call it a night. But tell you what, call in. Well, the first person on the episodes when we are doing this recording, we'll get you some merch.
Some swag.
Yeah.
We got some cool shit in mind, actually.
Hell yeah. So, again, thanks for listening. We will catch you next week. Hopefully Mark's feeling better, and we will get him back on here, too. And you got anything, bud?
Thanks, guys. As always, really appreciate everybody listening.
Talk to you in a couple weeks. Thanks.
Later.